Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettiner, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society, to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is Joe Gaviola, who is the current Montauk Lighthouse keeper. And he lives out at the Montauk Lighthouse, and he will tell us about that. Where are you from originally? I presume you weren't born in the lighthouse, although I had a neighbor once named Miller who in East Hampton who was born there.
I can't say that. I was born up island in Dix Hills and started coming out to Montauk about 1968, before Long Island Expressway was built and Sunrise Highway, and it was quite the journey back then through the duck farms.
Yes, I'm sort of around that era with you there. One of the things I've noticed that's very different today from then is the amount of foliage that we have, even in Montauk, which if you look at the photos of Teddy Roosevelt when he was out in Montauk, and you can see forever, you can see the lighthouse from probably what became downtown. Now you can't see any of that. And I think the Montauk Downs golf course was called that because of all of the lack of vegetation. What do you make of that? And then we'll talk about other things.
Well, it goes back to first, second, and third house when all of Montauk was pasture land for cattle and sheep. And so they basically ate everything. And after that was stopped, all the vegetation came back, a lot of it invasive. So everything looks different. But you're right. You look at the Seven Sisters out by Ditch Plains. You look at the Carl Fisher House. The vistas are completely different. And even in our lifetime, as you know, it's gotten much, much more dense.
Yeah, we lived on South Fairview Avenue and we could see the lighthouse. You can't today. So what was your long journey to get to where you were asked or wanted to live in the lighthouse?
So coming out in the late 60s, my family had a love of fishing. And the first places we stayed, Dan, you remember, were Soundview Cottages. And they were right next to the jetties, and there were six yellow cottages there, and yep. We would take about a month of staying there, and even the harbor was completely different back then, and the bulkhead wasn't all the way in, and you know, to get on some of the head boats and party boats, there was actually a pier that you had to walk on. There was no bulkhead. There were lobster traps everywhere, and for a kid, you know, a teenager, it was kind of heaven. And I would fish all night for bait and sell the bait to the party boats and then get a half day trip for free the next day. But that was my earliest recollections of being out here as a kid.
Do you remember the monster that got hauled in by Frank Mundus?
Frank was actually a big part of my life growing up. I started working on the charter boats here about 1971. And I stayed at Snug Harbor Motel, and Frank was next door then. And I was fascinated with what he brought in every day. I had never seen a white shark, a tiger shark, a basking shark, the makos, all the things that he brought in was just, and he was a fascinating character, as you know, with the earrings and painting his toenails red and green to port and starboard. I was fascinated as a kid watching him come in.
I think it was before your time even. I remember seeing him come in his fishing boat with a fish lashed to the side that was almost as big as his boat. It was over 3,000 pounds. I took pictures of it at the time.
Didn't see that one or the first one, which was the 4,500 pounder. That's at Salivar's restaurant.
Yeah.
But you know, as you know, Peter Benchley modeled Quint after him.
Yes.
And I tell people, if you had met Frank back then, he was kind of every bit as gnarly as Quint.
Oh, I tried selling him advertising in those days. I was a teenager when I started the Dan's Papers, and he would say, not interested.
But my affiliation with the lighthouse, I always fished underneath it, going back to surf casting. You
sure.
Know, around 1970. And then with my dad, we had a boat out here and would fish for bass and blues under the light, and had a fascination with it. And, you know, it came out permanently in 1987, started a whole group of businesses in Montauk Harbor. And then it was around 1997, Dick reached out to me, Dick White, who was chairman of the lighthouse. We were thinking of putting up a Lost at Sea memorial. And I had lost my cousin off the back of the Endorphin. And Annie Hodnick, a local, had lost her husband and his mate about 93, I think that was. So we started putting the idea of a Lost at Sea memorial together. I was very involved in the fishing community in the harbor. And Dick asked me to get involved. And then in 99, we actually installed the Lost at Sea memorial here. And then right soon after that, Dick asked me to come on board for the Montauk Lighthouse.
But you've had a long, fascinating career in banking prior to that time. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I did. I was lucky enough to be asked to join the board of directors of Suffolk Bank. And that was after they had taken over Bank of the Hamptons. That was in about 2002. Went on to become chairman of the board of Suffolk Bank and was its chairman for a significant period of time, eventually selling it to People's Bank reluctantly because it was a 125-year-old bank. But I'll put it this way, Dan, sometimes you're actually made an offer you can't refuse as a public company, as difficult as it is.
Yeah. And then, so Dick White, who also goes way back, how did this turn out to be an opening that someone could move into the lighthouse? Was there people there before?
So, yes, we have always had a keeper here. Marge Winsky was here in 87 when the Historical Society first leased the lighthouse from the federal government. Marge came in 87. She was here for 31 years. So she was here when I got asked to join the committee. What I did bring to the committee, though, the Lighthouse Committee, was a financial background. My background was in economics, and then at the bank, being, you know, chairman of the bank and going to Wharton, I brought the financial expertise that was kind of needed on the board here, especially after we purchased the lighthouse from the government in 1996. So when you own something like that, you also get all the bills. And, you know, they paid a dollar in a dream, I say, Dan, but with it came all the bills. And that's a big responsibility. Yeah. And it became a national landmark in 2012. And then we really have to keep the maintenance up here, and everything's expensive.
Does that include the property or just the building?
It does. It's the property. It's all of Turtle Hill here. It goes right down as the fence line. When you first approach the property. And on the other side is New York State Parks. And we have a wonderful relationship with New York State Parks. They own the parking lot and charge for it. We don't get anything from that, but we do have admission when you come in. A really cool number is that 1.3 million people drive by the lighthouse every year. And our gate alone, we have over 100,000 people come on our property every year. But 1.3 million go by. That's a lot.
What's so special about the Montauk Lighthouse? Because we both know what it is, I think.
So it's the history. It goes back to George Washington, who commissioned it in 92. It was in 1792. It was constructed in 1796. It's the oldest lighthouse in New York and the fourth oldest in the country. And the fact that we're also a National Historic Landmark, and we actually own it. You know, think about it. The people of Montauk, we the trustees, own a National Historic Landmark, and I can't tell you how proud that is for the whole community. And we're now the symbol of Long Island, and on Long Island's on New York State's license plate. And as you know, when you are standing at TSA at MacArthur Airport, Islip Airport, there's a big picture of the lighthouse there. And when you get off at Kennedy Airport, the first photograph you see is also of the coming internationally. First photograph you see is of the Montauk Lighthouse. And I think that is so cool.
It is. You were telling me about the document that you bid for and won or almost won. Tell me about that.
Actually,
how did you hear about it?
So I'm never short of words when it comes to the Washington document. So in 2007, we got a call from Waverly Auctions in Arlington, Virginia. They're the foremost rare document dealer in the country. And an anonymous collector was putting the original authorization for the purchase of this property, signed by George Washington, up for bid. And they'll typically reach out to historical societies to see if they're interested. So they called us up, asked us if we're interested. And it was like, are you kidding me? Are we interested? So nominated, you know who, to go down there and try and get it. And I'd never been to an auction in my life and went to the gallery, met the owner. He took me into a back library and there was this gorgeous document in old vellum, handwritten by the Montauk proprietors. And on the back of it is a paragraph by Tench Cox, who was Secretary of the Treasury. And right underneath are a couple lines that George Washington wrote. And for me, it was a really, really emotional moment looking at that document.
And how did the auction go?
So the more I stared at Washington's signature, Dan, the more I was worried that in my life, I'm never going to have the chance to touch something that Washington did. So I must admit that it was in a Lucite sleeve and I snuck my finger inside in case I didn't get it, just to say that I touched something that Washington did. So when it went into the auction, again, they had some of the rarest documents in the country there, and it was item number 82. So I had to wait for 82 other items to go through before this came up. I think the audience could probably see my heart jumping out of my chest when it finally came up. And when it did, I kept raising my red paddle so much that the owner of the gallery came over and he said, Joe, you're raising your own bid. I'll tell you when to raise your paddle. So I ended up getting it at a very wonderful price. And 2 weeks later, it was brought back here.
And it's there.
A wonderful ceremony. You may have been here for that when we presented it 2 weeks later, but it had a tear in the right top corner and it needed to be restored. So Dick White was going to take it down to the Folger Library to be restored. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, when they get it, they may see a fingerprint on there that they think is Washington. So I had to come clean that it was my fingerprint on Washington's signature.
How did you make the decision? And that document, I saw it there. It's under glass or in a case, right? You can look at it.
You can. It's there. Wonderful. It's the fact that we have it is just amazing. I never get tired of talking about it, Dan.
How did you come to decide you wanted to live there, or how did that happen?
Well, that's a good question. So I'd always loved this place. My favorite, I've been lucky enough to travel the world, and wherever I've been, I couldn't wait to get back to Montauk. So when I got rumblings that Marge was thinking about leaving, she worked for the post office also, rumblings that she was thinking of moving, I said to our committee, if Marge ever leaves, I want to live there. And Marge was a bit of a recluse, had Newfoundland dogs up here for all that time. And when she was thinking of leaving, I was actually divorced and both my daughters were off and married. And it actually would fit with me. But I remember telling the board that I would like to go in there. And I know it's a podcast. And they looked at me and they said, there's no effing way you want to go in there. And I said, I do. It needed work. And it took a year of restoration inside here. We tore the rugs up. We had to rewire, replumb. These fireplaces behind me were covered by the Coast Guard. Everything was utilitarian. So here I am, the chairman of the largest independent bank on Long Island, and I'm sleeping on an air mattress in the basement here, hanging my suits on copper piping with a ghost Abigail by myself, with a ghost in the basement.
Tell me about the... as if you were a real estate guy, and tell us about your facilities, where the private facility you're in there.
So I'm in the top floor of the 1860 keeper's dwelling. So when you first come on property, if you look to your right, there's a barn. That was the original 1796 keeper's dwelling that burned down. Next to it is a small white cottage looking. That was the keeper's dwelling in 1838. 1860 is where I am, which is our main museum. So underneath me, I'm on the second floor. Underneath me is our main museum. So I'm about half of the two-thirds of the top floor is where I live. So I'm the easternmost resident in New York, which is kind of cool. And I'm able to see Block Island Sound, Long Island Sound, and Turtle Cove, which is the Atlantic Ocean, all from my quarters, which I'm honored and blessed to be able to say that and be here. And it never gets old, Dan. And every day I feel special that I'm here.
Do you entertain at all, or do you have any social life, or do you invite people to come up there? Or?
So I'm also president of the Montauk Historical Society, which we also have the Carl Fisher House, Second House, and the Indian Museum. So I consider myself, unlike the other keepers who, I'm going to show you this lantern here, if I can. This is one of the original lanterns that they used to carry up the tower with before electricity, of course, that's here in my residence. So I'm not hauling whale oil up to the top of the light like they did. My role is more ambassadorial. I do a lot of personal tours for sponsors, for friends, for donors, for people that are interested in Montauk. I'm happy to do that. Definitely help them on the financial and fiscal side and event planning, work with the town board, work. And I'm president of the Historical Society and work with our executive director and everyone else. So it's quite different from climbing the tower every day, but I do go up there quite often and a lot of times by myself too, because I know I'm here for a certain amount of time and I would like to make the most of it.
Yep. Has there been any activity in the water that stands out that you've seen?
So as you know, what's been amazing in the past 5 years is the amount of whales off of our shore. When we were kids, I mean, we never saw whale life and the menhaden that we see now, Dan, and it's absolutely breathtaking. So we get whales out here, we get seals and a lot of the boats. You know, it never gets old to me to see the boats and the fishermen here under the light. So yeah, it's fabulous from that perspective.
And off in the distance, can you see the wind farm at all?
Yes. I don't want to get political here, but I a Block Island, and I wish they had pushed them out further than being right offshore of Block Island.
You're up. Let's see. The hill itself is about 80 feet up, isn't it?
So it is.
Quite above sea level there. You have quite a view. I don't know that people on the beach there can see it.
At night they can, because they have red lights on them, and it depends on today. It's a typical spring day in Montauk. It's foggy and you can't see a thing here. I'm not sure where you are, but you know, we get a lot of fog, but you can see them on a nice day. One of the interesting parts of being here weather-wise, though, is since we're on a hill, it's always windy here, always. And yes. I've been here for hurricanes, nor'easters, snowstorms, everything imaginable. And the wind gets exponential when it hits and just roars right up the lighthouse here. And if you're not careful, sometimes it'll actually take your legs out from under you.
Well, but the walls of that lighthouse are the original walls that, 6 feet thick at the bottom, something quite strong.
The new revetment is absolutely amazing. And I credit Greg Donahue for staying at it for over 30 years. So for the Army Corps and the DEC to fund a $40 million project, we'll be protecting our Turtle Cove, Turtle Hill for the next 100 years, just as we finished the restoration of the 1796 tower. We just finished that project, and hopefully we won't have to do a big restoration for another 100 years on that also.
Well, I want to just thank you for not only the podcast that you're on with me, but also for all you do. I think the Montauk community is so lucky to have someone of your knowledge. And I don't mean to flatter you, but wow, that you just joined up and are leading and being part of what is so important. The last thing I want to ask you about is the wheel that's behind you.
Yeah. So in my residence, I do have some artifacts that the Coast Guard has left here, some of them, and others I found by crawling around. Even the table, I wish I could show you the table that I have, is actually a door from the 1838 building I found in the attic of that building under a bunch of rat's nests and turned it into a table. The wheel behind me is from the cart that would haul the dories. I found that up in an attic also, and reconditioned it, and you'll see a sextant over here, which is on loan from the Coast Guard, and a small lantern here. I've got some other lanterns around here. A little bit of the new and the old. I do have some good creature comforts here, including a wine refrigerator over here, which I don't think they had that in the late 1700s.
Are some of them still full of wine? I'll
say one other thing. So when you ask me about, you know, being here and what it means to me. So as a teenager, I worked on the charter boats as a mate. And since then, I've run big corporations, been chairman of a bank. And I've said before I was the keeper here that the best job I ever had in my life was working on the back of a boat. And because I couldn't wait to get up in the morning and go to work. After that, a lot of other jobs. And now as the keeper of the lighthouse here, I have that same feeling that I did as a teenager. Couldn't wait to get up to work on the back of the charter boats. And I feel the same way here being the keeper, that I can't wait to get up in the morning, get out, walk around the property and feel blessed. And that's a cool thing to say, you know, almost 50 years later.
Yes. And thanks for coming. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. And thank you for all you do. Appreciate it.